Shayna
and Chris,
and we are Bad Queers. If you came out of the closet and got put in a box of stereotypes you don't belong to, then welcome to the Bad Queers Club.
All right, this week in Queer Urban Dictionary, I have transmissia. Transmissia is the unfounded hate or disdain for trans people or people that are perceived to be trans based on the idea of hate, not fear. So not transphobia. This is about hate. And the missia in transmissia means hatred. So this is a helpful word because it highlights the prejudice at the root of beliefs, attitudes, behaviors, and systems that hurt or deny the existence of trans and non-binary people. My example sentence is transmissia takes many forms. It stigmatizes or harms trans, non-binary, and gender non-conforming people. It denies the validity of their identities. It sees them as less human and or treats them as less worthy of care and respect. So those are examples of how it could take form. This is now replacing transphobia because it's not so much of a fear. It's definitely hate.
It's definitely hate.
It's like a lot more accurate.
Yes. I was like, if you remember, we defined transmissic like a few months ago. So this is, those are
like the parent
similar
of the word.
Yeah.
Like,
it's there, like we go. That's a good word.
They're related.
I was like, they're in the, it's a cut. My hands were moving. Like, yeah, how do like, they, it's a, they're in here. Thank you. Yes. They're in the same family. So you can tell somebody that they are transmissic. Mm-hmm. They're being transmissic. Like, oh, you were, that's transmissia. You know, the sentence words expand your vocab. My queer dictionary word of the week is sapphic. Sapphic is an umbrella term that includes lesbian, bisexual, and pansexual trans femmes, masks, non-binary folks, and cis women. Yet, unlike these sexualities, sapphic strives to conjure an experience more akin to an intention toward attraction. One oriented less to any specific gender identity and more to the fullness of a potential lover's humanity. Beautiful little moment, you know? Humanity. My sentence, we continue to learn some more. The term sapphic has a long history, one that dates all the way back to ancient Greece, no surprise, and has become an umbrella word that refers to a wide spectrum of sexualities and genders. I got this definition from them, so shout out to them.
I like sapphic. I like that sapphic's getting bigger, you know?
Yeah. I used to think it was very much just lesbian, but yeah. Once I actually was looking into the terms and seeing how much it actually encompasses more.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
I used to definitely think it was just lesbian, but like it is, it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I like this.
Look like all we're, oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was definitely one that like, when I Googled it, it was just like sapphic, but sapphic is just another term for lesbian. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No.
And I listened, I was like, umbrella, Ella. That's what it is. That's where we are. All right. Well, I'm so excited for today because we have company, not just any company. We have company that we have been hoping for and are very excited about. So this week's company, we would like to welcome Miami native Hope Giselle, who is the executive director, president, and CEO of National Trans Visibility March. Hope got her start in activism and facilitation while in college at Alabama State University, helping to found and govern the conservative school's first LGBT organization. Giselle graduated with a BFA and a master's in fine arts as the first openly trans woman to do so at her alma mater, Alabama State University, and hit the ground running with her modern social take on trans and Black bodies in public spaces. The author, Becoming Hope, Removing the Disguise, an activist, has now founded her own nonprofit organization, Allow Me, and works with organizations like the Human Rights Campaign, Freedom for All Americans, and LGBT University to help ensure that the voices of the communities she's a part of are heard. Giselle is definitely a force the world should be aware of.
Hope, we are so honored and excited to have you on the show. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us.
Thank you all for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah. So you're originally from Miami, right?
Yeah. 305. Okay.
Tell us about your tell us about your upbringing and how Miami shaped you.
So I grew up in Miami, and I have to, like, I say that because there's a difference in what people perceive Miami to be and Miami, right? Mm-hmm. And so Miami is not South Beach. Miami is not spring break. Miami is not, like, over the bridge. Miami is after the bridge. It's like, you know, people from, you know, Miami actually say that. And I went to Charles Audrey Middle School. And if you know, like, the area, that is Liberty City. So, like, when you look at First 48 and they're talking about, like, the Poker Beans Projects and all of that stuff, like, that is where I grew up. And as scary as the show tries to make that neighborhood, like, not to say that it wasn't scary, but it is to say that, like, if you were from there, it was kind of like an if you know, you know, kind of sort of neighborhood, as most, you know, Black and brown neighborhoods tend to be, where it's just like, yeah, don't bring your ass over here without a friend if you're not from here. Mm-hmm. And what I loved about my upbringing was that it was always full of the art. Like, no matter where you went, male, female, drag queen, because we didn't really have a lot of language for trans people back then. You had culture, you had art, there was dance, there was music, there was something. Even our homeless people, like, there were homeless people that were known. Like, there was this one guy that was known for playing his little, like, piano in the middle of the median. Like, there was never a place where you could go in Miami that didn't have art. And I went to Charles R. Drew, and that was the first magnet elementary school of its kind. But it was smack dab in the middle of every single, like hood project adjacent you could think of. If you lived in a project, you could get to Charles R. Drew Middle School and Charles R. Drew Elementary. And so what it did was it created a positive outlet for all of us in the hood to learn things like instruments, to learn things like ballet and dance and theater and all of that stuff. And I just remember, like, fun fact, Sammy went to my school. And Sammy recorded "I Like the Leg" in our school.
That used to be my shit. Like,
he recorded that. Yes, he recorded that at Charles R. Drew Elementary. He was in Charles R. Drew Middle School at the time. But our PE, it was like, first of all, now that I'm saying it out loud, it was like the Twilight Zone, like, saying this stuff. Like, I'm just like, wait a minute, that stuff. But it was normal for us. Our PE teacher was also, like, the music teacher, but he had passions and aspirations of being a producer. And so he took Sammy under his wing, and in the back of the PE field, they built, like, an entire record, like, professional recording studio. And Sammy recorded that song there when he was in middle school. And we all was like, oh, my God. Like, he recorded the, like, part of the video was on the playground. It was, like, really cute. So, like, that's a part of my little fun fact history of, like, being adjacent to a celebrity. But beyond that, I really had a passion for theater. And then I grew my passion for dance and ballet over time. And I'm so grateful for my grandmother. My grandmother was the one that, like, really pushed my mom. When I wanted to, like, do the switch and make the jump from theater to ballet, my mom was like, and my grandmother was just like, let that boy dance. Like, is it, you know, like, just let him dance. It's not that serious, yeah, you know? And my grandmother understood very early on. And I think it was because my grandmother had a very cultured life, because my grandfather was, like, a kingpin. So he took her everywhere and she got a chance to see like all these different things. But I think that she understood that, like, at least the justification for her was that dancers make money. Right. And so at the very least, allow him the opportunity to make some money. But I think that my grandmother saw it before anybody else saw it. It was just kind of like, I'm not going to let you railroad my grandbaby. You know, like, we're not about to do that. And I did that all the way up until I got to high school. Now, my high school was Miami Senior High, and it was one of the oldest high schools, if not the oldest, but I don't want to lie and get my facts wrong, high school in Miami. And they didn't have a dance program. So, fun fact, I created one. When I got there, they had PE class that featured, like, a dance, like, moment. And because I had always had folks in my life that encouraged me and my differences. For all of the folks that were, like, very against who I was, and we can get into, like, some of the nuances of some of those stories later. I don't want to, like, belabor it, but there were so many other people that really, like, encouraged me. So wherever I went, if I wanted something to be that wasn't, I never had a problem saying something. And my freshman year of school, I literally was teaching the dance class. They just had, like, a teacher for legal reasons, like, pretend to be whatever. Just be there. But like I was teaching the dance class and I was guaranteed an A as long as I came in with a different routine every class. And so I would be at home like making up routines and then coming to class, you know, the next day, and I would be teaching in the gym. And my mom did not know this. So my mom, sorry when you see this, but I bought myself like a little pair of hot shorts and I used to wear like the hot shorts. We didn't have a dance program. So y'all know we didn't have a dance class. So we were just in the like a section of the gym. So mind you, like all of the basketball players are in this section of the gym. There's like other sections of stuff like going on in the gym. And here is this little gay black boy in these hot shorts from Hollister and a tank top looking like I'm trying to audition for like Fame or something, teaching all of these girls because I was, of course, the only boy in the class. Yeah. And like, it was just, it was the funniest thing now that I think about it. But like my upbringing was just really, it was, I could talk about the trauma, but like, I think the things that like got me to the point where I am now are those moments, like the moments where I got a chance to be myself unapologetically and people supported that. And so I'll start there. Like that's kind of a little bit about how we got to where we are.
Yeah. I love that. And I mean, you see that in other cities. And when we talk to other people, like, you know, there's so much trauma associated with some of our childhoods, but there are affirming places and people along the way. So that was good that there was, you know, Miami brought that out and, you know, there, you were able to be yourself. How do you think you were as a coach? I wanted to ask.
They love me. First of all, the teacher that was assigned to like just monitor the class while I taught it, she would learn the routines. And like, it would be so funny because we had a very unhealthy, I always say Miami High was like, in some ways, like it was a silo for like all of the weirdos of the area and all of like the artistic kids. And because the teachers were so affirming and like, so essentially, we just had a really personal relationship with a lot of our teachers. And I think that I was a really good coach. Like the girls would take some of my routines, like the cheer squad, the girls who were on cheer squad, they would take some of my routines and do them at the pep rallies. And, you know, like everybody was always respectful. They would ask. And like my teacher one time, she was like, I used one of your routines when I went out dancing with my boyfriend. And, you know, he was so shocked that I like, and mind you, she was not good. Like she learned the routine, but it wasn't like she was good. And so like, I just always felt really good. Like when, you know, either students, my peers, or like, you know, the teacher would come back and be like, oh my God, like this makes me feel so good. And I feel so empowered. And like, even some of the jocks, like once they got used to me being who I was, a lot of them like would be over there across. They're supposed to be playing basketball, but y'all learning dances, you know? So it always felt really good to like have that impact on my school.
That's awesome.
I also just could imagine being the teacher that got assigned and was like, wow, I don't have to prepare anything. I just get to be here and pay attention. Learn. And you're the one that has to rely on your grade for this they're getting paid.
That was it. Let me tell you. And first, when my mom found out, my mama is, and I think that that's where I get some of my go-getter, like money, money, money mentality. Because when my mom found out, I was like, oh girl, I'm guaranteed an A. She was like, fuck that. Like, are they going to pay you? Like, because I just feel like you should get paid. Like,
take it up a notch.
Look, it was a whole thing. Like, my mama came to the school to ask if they were going to pay me for teaching this class. And it was so, they were like, ma'am, like, legally, we just can't do that.
Your child is enrolled here. Like, we can't.
Right. Like, it was the funniest thing. But, like, I think that the school created a silo for us, like that just made life unrealistic at one point, because going there for 4 years was like being in some sort of like alternate universe of High School Musical. Mm-hmm. And then having to leave that and go into the real world where other high schools and other people, and then going to an HBCU, I was like, what the fuck is this? And why are y'all so ignorant? And why don't people mingle here? And why do y'all allow like that person to be bullied? Like, we just didn't do that at Miami High. Like, there were a couple of times where people tried it, but like, it was a united front at our school. Like, you didn't bully people. You didn't, like, it just wasn't a thing. And so I was really grateful that that was the choice that my mom made, because the school I wanted to go was Miami Northwestern, which is a very popular high school. They're best known for the Golden Girls, Tracy Young Byron. She goes viral all the time. She's always on the Shade Room. And I wanted to go and dance under her. But the environment at that school was known to be very homophobic and very, very violent towards its queer students. And even though that was my mama's alma mater, she refused. And so I ended up going to Miami High. And like, as much as I wanted to like have that legacy of like knowing how my mom felt walking through those halls of Northwestern, I don't think she could have made a better choice sending me to Miami High, because I got to be myself there.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful thing to be able to do that within the arts. I grew up in the arts as well. I was a musician. I played the drums, and to be around folks who didn't have to hide any of the things that are deemed as weird, are deemed as too much or too flamboyant or anything, that didn't exist, because it honestly helped the area that you were in. So that's beautiful that you were able to be surrounded by that. And I don't think, as the Alphabet Mafia that we are, that we get to talk about the importance of how the arts are able to impact that for us in terms of our expression, in terms of building community, in terms of just feeling free. Like, I don't think we get to give as much credit to the arts as we should. So I'm really happy that that was your foundation for growing up and being able to be yourself. So in that process, was it around high school? Was it around college? When was your trans awakening?
It was definitely college. It was a sophomore year of college. And it was, y'all, when I tell you, so I'm one of those trans people that like to remind folks that not all of us have that whole, like, I've known since I was a kid, like, I always knew. So, like, that's just not my thing. I was one of those people that, like, was like steadfast on the idea that, like, I'm not a girl. Like, I'm perfectly fine being a very feminine, like, I knew that I was flamboyant and feminine and all of those other, like, things. And when I got to college, my freshman year, I learned the like the term androgynous. And I was like, oh, okay, that's me. We in there. That's what that's what I be doing, right? And I think it was just because there's a part of my fashion that is still very masculine of center. There's a part of me that still has like, I want things to fit looser, and I need this to be, you know, like there's a little twist to it, but like I feel like the idea of there being like masculine elements to my fashion. And I kind of sort of like really downgraded androgyny to fashion and fashion only, which is why I think I agree with it or identify with it like my freshman year. Sophomore year, to pay the bills and to get a couple of dollars in my pocket, there was one gay club that was specifically for gay people in Montgomery. And it was called 322. And they had all of these drag queens of different ages, of different races. And one of them, her name was Mindy. Shouts out to you, Mindy. And Mindy was the most athletic drag queen I had ever seen. She was the first drag queen I ever saw do backflips and splits and dips and all of that stuff. And so I was like, well, I can't do a backflip, but I could definitely outdance her. No shade to you, Mindy, but I could, right? And I was like, I need a couple of dollars. And I saw, like, that was my first time realizing that drag queens got hit. So I was like, oh, if I could do this, I could make a couple of dollars every weekend. And then like, I could pay my phone bill. Like, I won't have to ask my friends. Like, because by this point in my career, in my college career, what I will say is that me and my mom had stopped talking completely. I got my first sew in and my mama was not feeling it. And that kind of like threw a wedge in our relationship. And it wasn't like she was helping much anyway. My mama gave me $200 and dropped me off on the campus and was like, see you later, right? Like, I got some grocery cards every now and then, but like once I got that sew in and I refused to take it out, like it was kind of like I was on my own. And so I went and auditioned for the club, and the owner was this, I don't know how to describe Jeff, but he was a very stereotypical Alabamian, like heterosexual.
even just with the accent says everything.
y'all can picture it. Okay. That's why I tried to throw that in there. But he was so cool. Him and his wife were very, very cool people. And I was like, Jeff, I need to audition for your club because I need to make some money. He was like, okay, if you can get these people to give you $200 tonight, you're in, you're on the cast. And it was just that simple. And so I started with Sierra Get Up, because I saw that like you had to like have costumes, and I was a broke college kid. Like, I didn't have no money to get no costumes, but I had plenty of wigs because that's what I spent my refund checks on. And I had plenty of black cargo pants and things to make like I was Sierra. And so I did that, and the crowd went up because one, it was like a black crowd, and the only black queen that was on the cast at the time was an older woman. So she wasn't appealing to the college kids that were coming. Mm-hmm. And so when I got up there, even though I wasn't the best drag queen, like they were like, yes, bitch. And I made $300 that night in tips. Wow. And then on top of that, Jeff paid me $200 for like a fee and was like, you're on the cast. So my drag progressively got better as the drag queens progressively read me for filth every week, because they was like, you can't keep coming up in here, you know, as a little boy in geese thinking that you gonna get by. So I had to start padding, and they, you know, they helped me buy costumes and things of that nature. And one day after, like, it was a Saturday show, because I did Friday nights and Saturday nights. And I woke up that Sunday morning, and I guess I was tired. I wasn't a big partier, so I wasn't like dead drunk or nothing like that. I was just very tired. I think I must have had a really good night at the club or something. I can't remember. And the way that my room was set up, because I'm a vain Leo, is that when I sit up in my bed, there's a mirror right there, so I can be the first thing that I see in the morning, because once again, I'm a vain Leo. And this particular morning, I popped up and I still had on my bra, but my stuffing had come out of it. One of my lashes was off. My wig had slid back. I hadn't wiped my makeup off, so I didn't slept in it, and it's just like disheveled. And for the first time ever in my entire life, I felt unattractive. And that just wasn't a thing that I was accustomed to. Like, I had been called a lot of things in my life, but I had never been called or felt unattractive until that moment. And I tried to put my finger on, like, why did I feel this way? And I couldn't pull myself out of the phone. And at the time I had like my natural hair, and this was like at the beginning of the natural hair crazy, all Cantu crazy and Bantu knot and everything. Mm-hmm. And so I was just like, okay, I'm going to do a wash day. I'm going to get my hair together. That's going to make me feel better. I'm going to pull myself together, and then I will feel better about the day. And so I pull up YouTube, and I'm like looking for some hairstyle or something to like do to my hair. And I say it all the time, like, it had to be fate, because Janet Mock ain't never been no influencer that talked about her hair. I don't even think that, like, as beautiful as Janet's natural hair is, I don't think I've ever been in an interview where she ever even talks about, like, what she does or how she does her hair. But she popped up in this feed. And at first, it was just this powerful Black woman speaking at colleges. And I was just, like, enamored with, like, how she spoke and, like, what she was talking about and women empowerment and, like, all of this stuff that, like, I had never given a fuck about until that moment. And then I get to this one video, and she's like, you know, as a trans woman. And I'm like, excuse me? Like, what now? What? What's that? And I'm big on Google and finding out the definitions of things. Mm-hmm. And so I Google, and I'm like, wait a minute. Ooh.
There it is.
Oh, wow. That's why you went here crying. it was just like a whole revelation. So like that day was the day that like everything in my wardrobe that I could not somehow like finagle and make feminine, it went in the trash. All of my Jordans and stuff, like I literally put them in a bucket, and I yelled down the hallway, and I was like, which one of y'all want some free shoes? And like all of the boys was like, are you fucking kick? Because I had kick. Like I had And they came and they took them all. And like, I started all over that day. Just like, I was like, okay, if we're going to do this, we're going to do this. And what was so surprising was that for as many stares and whispers as I got, there was so much affirmation of me finally just doing it. And so that told me that everybody else had seen something that I didn't even see. And there was like, even the lunch ladies was like, okay, it's about time. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the, okay. Yeah. I see you, and I'm glad that you see yourself now. And that was like so affirming. So I can't say that like even like the initial coming out was tough for people, because I think that everybody was just waiting on me to get it. Like they were all just like, okay, even the hood boys on campus. They was like, okay, cool. Like,
always the case where people are just waiting for you, and you're like, why didn't you have this conversation with me sooner? Right.
So I knew, right? But that I think that that was the day, and it was sophomore year, and I was just, I don't know what gave me that type of courage, because I think I've always been bold, but like I knew that that was a bold move in Alabama on an HBCU campus. And I didn't look back, and I had a really great set of friends that like affirmed me and just made me feel good about myself. And that really helped.
How was that first year when you moved out? You had mentioned it before, like the leaving the bubble of Miami High to go to Alabama State and HBCU. How was that first semester and just the adjustment to get to that sophomore year?
So literally I wasted no time. Like I told y'all, my mama gave me $200 and hit it. As soon as my mama hit it, I don't even think my mom had hit the interstate before I was at the hair store buying weaves, right? Like I was at the hair store like, I'm getting some twists, right? Like that was just like my first thing. And I think that I justified it because I also knew that it would be a problem for my mama. So I was like, if I get twists, they're close enough to locks, so she's not going to have as much of a problem. And I was right, because like years later, as me and my mom talk about stuff, like she had seen the twist. Like, so it wasn't that she didn't know, but she justified it the same way that I justified it. She was like, yeah, like I was letting you slide with that because, you know, it was like locks. And so I was like, okay, cool. So I was right. But literally my cousin Dominique, as soon as my mama left, I was like, Dominique, can you grip my hair? And I had like 2 inches, not even 2 inches. I had like a but Miami girls get it done. Okay. Yeah. Miami girls get it done. And she gripped my hair. It took 2 days. And like, I had my twist in immediately. So it was kind of like, I didn't have to do a hard rebrand. Like nobody had really seen me for real. And so by day three, once my hair was done and I started to make my rounds on campus, it was like, who the fuck is that? And the name Hope is very interesting because people always ask me like, and they always like lean in because they think it's going to be some beautiful, powerful story. No, absolutely not. It's not a beautiful, powerful story at all. I was hiding from my mom on Facebook because she saw a picture of me and my boyfriend at the time and it just was too much for her. And she wanted me to delete my Facebook. And I was like, no, girl, do you know how much it takes to build this social capital? Right.
Like you shouldn't even be on Facebook.
Right. Right. Like, you shouldn't be here. Like, this is my world.
Right.
And so I had my friend Anna, disabled the page. And then when it was time for me to pull it back up, I was like, okay, so what is my name going to be? And there was a girl at the bottom of the screen. Her name was Hope Gonzalez. And I was like, I like Hope. Hope is cute. Cool, Hope. And then I was like, well, this page is disguised for my mama. So like all my OG hopefuls remember when I was Hope Disguised and not Hope Giselle. Mm-hmm. And I went by Hope Disguised for the longest. And so my freshman year, whenever people would ask me like what my name was, because it like, mind you, that happened like senior year of high school and Hope stuck in high school. So it wasn't like it was foreign for me to call myself Hope at that point. And so I just started telling people my name was Hope. And what was really interesting was that because I was the only one of my kind on campus, whenever I would get new teachers, they would know off rip. Like they would be like, oh, you Hope, you're the one that everybody is talking about. Got you. And I really didn't have an issue with even professors being like, okay, so I'm going to change your name in my book and you're going to be Hope in this class. And I thought that like, as far as fucked up as some of the experience that I had at Alabama State was, I had a lot of people that just got it and that just kind of went with it. And so freshman year was interesting because I did get a lot of hatred from people and I had to fight a lot. And so it was just kind of like, well, why does he get his own dorm room? Like, and but then it was the idea of like, oh, he's going to rape people and he's going to be touching people. So I'm glad that he has his own room. But then there was the, oh, can I have some noodles at 2 o'clock in the morning guy? And I was never the type, and it's no shade to the gays that are. But I was never the type that was enticed by men that wanted to fuck me in the dark. And so I also got a reputation for being the mean faggot on campus that didn't want to fuck with the DL boys. And so then it became a challenge for all of them. And I like there was an influx of a point in time where all of them were trying to prove that they could be the one that was going to get me to break. And when that started to happen, then I had to fight them all because they would get upset because all the other gay boys on campus thought that it was sexy and thought that it was enticing. And so they were having their way with all these other boys. But the one that was giving girl vibes and the one that was kind of sort of like adjusting the way that they saw, you know, the idea of being with a boy at the time was not giving them any play. And there was one guy who I did like entertain. And then when I realized that he didn't respect me for real, I stopped entertaining him. And it just became a thing. And like, that was a whole thing that I don't think I've ever really discussed or talked about. But a large part of the violence that I was experiencing was from men who were hitting me up on Jack, football players that wanted to have threesomes and run trains on me and were very vocal about it. And like me being adamant about saying like, no, if you're not an openly gay man, I'm not fucking with you. Like, we're just not doing that. And then they would take that animosity from Jack to the cafeteria. And then I would end up in a fight. And people didn't realize that we were fighting because I told him no in private. And so now he's trying to embarrass me publicly. And y'all don't even know, like y'all are cheering him on for beating up the faggot, but he's like low key in the same boat. And it was just, it was a thing, but also I didn't get beat up. So that was the thing too.
Okay, like, come on. Come on.
You know, there was
record unblemished.
Like,
okay.
There was very much so that kind of energy. But that first year was really interesting, I think, socially, because I also understood in the theater department, and I say this all the time, best theater education that I think that anybody could get. And I would encourage anyone who is in their theater practicum to go to Alabama State and learn from some of the greats. Fuck NYU. I was supposed to go there, but fuck NYU, fuck UCLA, fuck all the other AMDA, all of that. I will stand 10 toes down on the fact that education, as far as being an actor, was bar none. And I don't think I would have gotten that education anywhere else. But the experience of homomysia and the experience of being exiled and the experience of being told to my face and in front of the entire student body, all four classes, that I was the best audition that they had seen in forever. And this is not something that only I can verify. The entire class, freshman, senior, sophomore, all of us, they sat everybody down. We had this thing called lock-in. And they singled me out and said, this young man had the best audition we have seen in years. And then the assistant dean proceeded to say, but as long as you look like that, you will never perform on my stage. And that was my introduction to theater. And I knew from a very early standpoint that this is not going to be what I thought it was going to be when I was growing up. I thought that this was going to be the safe place that I had on campus. And it turned out to be one of the most unsafe places for me to be on campus every single day. And I didn't want to change my major. And so I just had to figure out how to change my outlook. And it was really, really sucky because there were so many things that I couldn't participate in. There was a theater fraternity that I couldn't be involved in because they didn't know whether to haze me as a boy or a girl. They didn't know what to do with me. And there were shows that I couldn't audition for. I auditioned for The Color Purple, had the best audition for Mister that they had seen once again, and everybody knew it. I deconstructed myself to go in and audition for that part because I didn't want them to say that they couldn't see me in the role. Mm-hmm. I took out my hair. I unbraided everything. I went and literally to the point where I got a pair of slacks and dirtied them up and wore some old combat boots and a torn up flannel and went into the audition as the character so that they couldn't have any excuse to turn me down. Got a standing ovation from all of my peers. I saw the look on the director's face and still didn't get the part because they said that they didn't want people who were donating to the show, which were church folk, to see me on campus wearing a tutu and then have to come and see me in The Color Purple as Mister. And I was like, but isn't that a testament to how amazing that y'all are as professors, if anything? That you can turn that person into Mister? And they refused. So it was just the only time that I got a chance to perform on a main stage show was when I did Angel and Rent. And that's for obvious reasons, you know. So, And my freshman year was very, very interesting. And some of that stuff bleeds into other years. But freshman year, I found out that I was just not going to be safe on that campus. And that if I was going to perform, I would have to set the stage for those performances. It wasn't going to be through my major.
And we actually talked about this a couple episodes back, but we both went to PWIs, but my wife went to Howard and everything. And, you know, we know what it was growing up. I know acceptance is here now, but I was like, we would love to hear more Black HBCU stories. And we had a couple of people write in, but I was like, that's a whole thing that's just not explored. I would love to hear more about, just because it's such a different and unique experience.
Yep. Ooh. And then
go ahead, Shana. Sorry.
This fun slippery slope into you in February being announced as the executive director and CEO of the National Trans Visibility March. Congratulations.
I'm really excited about it. This year, our theme is Illuminate, Educate, and Advocate. I'm really excited about it because this is my first year coming in as executive director, CEO, and president. And that's a little tidbit that y'all will get a little bit later on as to what I'm president of, because we're doing some things. It's going to be really cool. But the National Trans Visibility March means a lot to me because when they were on year two, they invited me to come in and it was a shit show of amazement. We decided that we were going to get on a trolley, fill it with trans people, and I was going to get off at every major monument in DC and we would hold some sort of action. And we had it broadcast for I think about 5 or 6 different major cities where other trans people were watching and zooming in and all of these different things. And that was my introduction to the Trans Visibility March. And Marissa Miller, who formerly held this position, shout out to Marissa, was always telling me, she would always be like, "Hope, there's going to be a space for you here forever. Just stick around. And 6 years later, I get a call, and she calls me every year to do something with the march. And so I'm not thinking that like she's going to call me this year for anything different. Like, I think she's going to be like, "Okay, girl, can you host the whatever? Like, you know, can we do a 1-2? And she was like, "So, Hope, how would you feel about being our new executive director, CEO, and president?" And I'm just like, "Girl, yeah, I'll do it. Wait, what? It's not our usual conversations. It's like, that's not what we usually discuss around this time." And I couldn't do nothing but cry, because I was just like, I love my community. And sometimes I don't always feel loved back, because I know that I'm the girl that people count on to say the hard things that nobody wants to say. But sometimes in being the girl that says the things that other people don't want to say, you get folks that feel like you're always the opposition. I have people that have overtly called me a bully because I say the things that are truthful versus like biting my tongue and allowing people to feel like it's okay to like push over on trans people, on Black women, on women of any kind. Like, and I think that those things can often like make me feel siloed and also make me feel like my work isn't valuable and like it's not valid and like it's not being seen. But when Marissa called me and gave me this opportunity to step into this spot, how could I say no? And I wanted to come in and put the Hope Giselle brand of advocacy and illumination and education on this. And we've done it so many other times, but this year I'm stepping it up a notch. There's a little bit more education that's coming into it. There's a lot more art that's going to be featured in it. And there's definitely going to be some very strong messages from some heavy hitters this year. And the Torch Awards and some of our recipients are freaking amazing. We're shooting for an August 22nd date. Mm-hmm. So don't put it on your calendar just yet. We're waiting for DC to see what they're going to say. But we're shooting for August the 22nd as a date. For that weekend. So you will come in on the 22nd, the 23rd will be the Torch Awards, and then the 24th will be the actual day of the march. If I had my way, Chrisette Michelle, because I'm sick of acting like I still want to cancel that lady. Like, I think she's paying.
At this point, sheesh.
Look, come on now. If we keep letting Kanye make albums, like at this point, for Doug, do number sang, girl. Like, she ain't do nothing. Like,
that was it. She picked up a check. It was ill-advised, right. But you know, she can't wear a White Lives Matter shirt. So, you know, clock that. In what ways can people show up and show out for these events outside of just the, you know, the one or the weekend? Like, how do people support the event?
We need your money. We need like upfront, outright, just in your face. We need your money. We need your donor dollars. For all of you all that, you know, are part of philanthropy spaces and you listen to this podcast, if y'all are wondering how to get rid of that $30,000 before the fiscal year is over, throw it my way. You know, there are so many things that like we need as far as like even in-kind donations. If you have like a space for our artists to perform in, like, let me know. If you know a good DJ for the after party, let me know. If you sell t-shirts and you're willing to print up a couple of t-shirts for free for us, let me know. If you can bus people, your uncle runs a bus company and all of that stuff, and he want to give back and write something off, like, let us know, because we want to make sure that one, as many people that can get to DC this year can get there and can get there in an equitable way. And two, we also just want to make sure that folks are having a good ass time. I want people to feel like this march becomes like a staple in community where we can get together, we see each other, we love on each other. And it is not exclusive to just trans people. I think that that's another thing that I want to let people know, is that we need your help no matter what part of the community that you come from, so long as it comes in love and light. So if you're one of the butch queens that's not with the foolishness, like, yes, sir, you can donate. If you're one of the lesbian women that does believe that trans women are women, then come on. Like, we need your help too, sis. Like, this is a family affair, but it is a family affair that centers a certain particular member for this, you know, this particular instance. And that's just kind of what I want people to know going into this, is that we need your support in multiple ways. And even if you can't support in those in-kind ways, it takes nothing to share it. Make sure that people know that this is happening. So follow Trans Visibility March on Instagram. Go to our website at National Trans Visibility, transvisibilitymarch.org and make sure that you're up on the dates. When you find things out, see something, share something is my big motto. Even if you got to share it 1,000 times, because just because you shared it once doesn't mean that everybody on your network saw it. So keep mm-hmm. sharing it so that all the trans people in your network and all the allies in your network know that it's happening. And do your due diligence to be there yourself if you can. You know, I think that those are just some of the things, like, from top to bottom, from the biggest ass to the smallest ass, that folks can do to make sure that this is not only successful, but that it feels like home for people. Because we all need that. You know, we all need it.
Absolutely. In terms of feeling like home, for those who have never been to the National Transvisibility March, how would you describe the experience?
Oh, child, it's the cookout that the cis folks are not invited to. It's the cookout that the cis folks are not invited to. And like, when I say cis folks, because I know that we have like queer people that are definitely cis people, but I'm talking about like the cis head. Like, they not really invited. Like, even in their allyship, like y'all gotta watch from the outside. Like, I want y'all to enjoy, but I want y'all to enjoy as like the mom on Christmas that's like, you ain't think I was gonna get you that baby doll, but I got it for you. You know, like I want that to be the type of energy that the cis folks who do come. But for the folks that have never been, for all of my trans and TGNC folks that have never been, and especially for my black trans women who are often like, y'all feel downtrodden. Like, we know what it's like. We see our sisters constantly being taken the fuck up out of here. And I'm going to say taken up out of here because ain't nobody just dying. We are being murdered. And it's one of those things where you get to come and your favorite trans influencer is not a trans influencer that weekend. She's just a girl just like you, and she's just chilling and talking. And, you know, some of your favorite trans math folks, like the people that you don't think have anything to say about the issues, like our trans male elders and all of those things, like you get to learn things. People are sharing their resources. So if you're one of the girls who is trying to do OnlyFans and you have not been able to figure it out, like there's so many resources being shared. And this is not a respectability politics space. And this year, I want to make that perfectly clear. So there are going to be workshops on how to figure out, you know, the best way to set your lighting up so that when you bend it over, it don't look, you know, a certain way that you don't want it to look. There's also going to be financial resources where we talk about how to build that checkbook. And if you are going to be an entrepreneur of any kind, how do you make sure that you don't get hit with taxes and all of this other stuff? Like, there's a both and part to our community. Not all of us are sitting in respectability. Not all of us are sitting in visibility. Not all of us are sitting in system ability. And I'm making room for all of us, whether you come, you know, on day one of transition or day 465 of transition, you are welcomed here. How and so ever, let it be known that we are not censoring the voices of the uber privileged. So you are welcome to come if you are a trans person, but I am not censoring your voice on a stage full of people who are being murdered and taken up out of here as a person who has a house in the hills. And that is a very direct comment. And you can feel how you want to feel about it, but I am not allowing celebrity trans people that just transitioned a year and a half ago to come on stage and take up space from people who are doing real work, who are busting their ass on the front lines, who are put in uncomfortable positions every single day for TikTok stars, for models, for certain TV show people that don't do nothing for the community. I'm not doing that. This is for the folks that are genuinely out here every day working. And so everybody is welcome, but not everybody will be platformed respectfully. And that needs to be understood.
Respectfully.
Y'all hear her? Okay. Direct. Okay. Listen, but it sounds like an amazing time, and thanks for sharing the different ways that people can contribute and how they should show up. So excited for that. How do you take care of yourself with all of this going on, all that you do, all you educate, you're a content creator, you're activist, community organizer. How do you take care of yourself with everything going on?
Like, I don't take care of myself. My tribe takes care of me. I have a tribe of people. If you follow me on Instagram every now and then, I say my people, my people, my people. And my husband is waving in the background because he refuses to let this interview go by without me acknowledging his beautiful presence. But my husband takes really good care of me, and my tribe takes really good care of me, because I'm not always the kindest to myself. And I'm not always the kindest to my body. And I have a group of people that remind me that I don't have to do it all, and that I don't have to do it all by myself. And without those folks, I wouldn't be able to sustain a lot of the work that I do. I wouldn't have a scholarship to give to y'all. I wouldn't have anything. And so I'm really just grateful to the folks in my camp, in my immediate circle, who don't mind respectfully telling me that I need to sit my ass down. And that's what it is. And when I can, I know, you know, I travel. Y'all always catch me on the beach in the summer because that's what I do. That's my self-care. You know, I might be working from that beach, but I'm at that beach and I get there every year. And I think just music on a regular day, if life is beating me up and if I'm just feeling like a little lost out here, there's nothing that a good album of whatever mood I'm feeling can't cure. Sarah Bareilles, I know that she's a white woman, but she has this EP, it's 6 songs. And it has rang true for me for the last 7 years. I put on Once Upon a Time. And by the time those 6 songs are done playing, I am in a better place. So Sarah Bareilles, I don't know if you'll ever hear this girl, but like, I love you and thank you for that album. But that's kind of, those are some of the small things that I do for myself that make me feel good on off days and how I take care of myself.
That is a great album as well, because I love me some Sarah Bareilles.
Come on now. The Waitress. Like, come on.
She does the things. She does the things. I hope she never disappoints us in life. Like, I just need her to continue doing what she does currently.
If you racist, just be quiet. If you racist,
like, I'm like, please never let us know. Because I don't want to. You know. Keep it in. I can't know. I can't keep know.
I don't want to know. Okay. Like, please. Come on. Don't do it.
And speaking of your mans, because we gotta give a shout out there. Because you all have recently gotten married or are about to get married. I know that you were proposed to. Yeah, I saw the proposal video. So tell us a bit about the background and then how your love story has unfolded so far.
So we met of all places on Tinder. Look, it's hard out here trying to date in real life. And you know what? I can't be saying it because somebody's going to call my privilege out and people going to be like, girl, that's not true. You can't do it. Okay. So like, I'm going to say that it's hard for me because I am very unapproachable. I have resting bitch face and I understand that. I know it. I live in it. I get it. Men do not approach me. Not because I'm not beautiful, but because they like, I don't know, she looks neat. But we met on Tinder and what people don't realize and what people don't know, but they will know from watching our film. If you have bought tickets, shout out to, you know, that. Go to hopetosell.com events and grab your tickets so that you can come to the wedding, even if you're not invited to the wedding. It'll be a live event. But this is our third time trying to date. And the reason why it was our third time was because I met somebody that did not play games with me. When he wasn't available, when he didn't have capacity, he left me the fuck alone. And I love that because as a trans woman, there are so many men that don't have capacity to love you in a specific way. And instead of just leaving you alone, they string you along and make you feel like and it's just like, every single time that something came up that he knew was going to take a significant amount of time for him to work through, get through, figure out, it was just like, I hope you don't hate me, but I would rather tell you that I don't have the time than waste your time and you find out that way. And so that happened twice. And I'm not going to lie to y'all, that third time accepting that invitation, I was like, boy, I don't know. Like, you aggravating now. Yeah. And, you know, but right time, right place for everything. And he came back this last time. And I think that it wasn't necessarily like him just coming back. It was the approach the last time. Okay. And that man said to me, I know what I want. I want you. And here is my proposition. I need you to give me a year. Live with me for a year. If at the end of the year, you don't love me, you don't want to be with me, we can break this lease. You can go your way. I will go my way. No questions asked. I won't even hound you about why you don't want to be with me. But I need you to let me prove to you that I am serious about you this time. And he didn't waste his opportunity because, almost 6 years later, and here we are. So
I was like, okay, swoon.
Right. You know? I was like, queer community. Please take note instead of U-hauling. Do this responsibly.
Yeah. And no, even the respect though of those first two times of like letting you know, like, I just can't, like, there's sexiness in that where it's just like, I respect your time. I don't want to waste your time. I don't want to string you along. Like, that is the worst thing. And a lot of people dating don't know how to set that boundary or just be respectful and empathetic to that other person that they're involving. So that is, I love that.
That's right. We have the wedding coming up. And like I said, for those of you all who are not invited but still want to be a part of the festivities, there's a live event that is being streamed for folks on a special location on a special date. And you can purchase those tickets at hopegiselle.com. You just click the events tab and you can grab you some tickets if you really want to be up in my business and see how it happens and see what the love story unfolds to be like. And I'm really excited. I can't wait to share it with y'all.
How's planning going?
Baby. Okay. Throw it in the garbage. I will never do this again.
Yes.
Like, J-Lo, hats off to her. Because, bitch, I don't care even if I had the money.
Yeah,
this shit is stressful. It's stressful. It makes you not want to do it no more.
It wouldn't. Mm-hmm. I am firmly a one and done. I mean, never say never, and heaven forbid, knock on, if I divorce, that's it. Like, that's it. I wouldn't want to do it again. It was beautiful. Yeah, no. It's beautiful, but it is so stressful. It's stressful.
I feel like you said, heaven forbid if it did have to happen, likely only because one of us dies, right? Like, God forbid.
Yeah.
But if it had to happen, I'm not doing the ceremony again. I will accept your little ring, sir or madam or them. But I'm not doing the play. Like, no. It's giving courthouse, honey. Like, we're not doing it.
Exactly. Might be Zoom. I don't know what they're going to have in a couple of years. But they might have it now. Like, I don't. It's just too much. And the stress of even just the guest part of it. And then when you family members who want to invite other people, where it's just, I don't rock with them. There's just so much. The cost, it is.
Mm-hmm. Like, okay, there's security at the door. You will not bring nobody that I don't fuck with up in my face. And I'm look on, here. Security. Hope you know it's not going to change because I don't play those games. I'm a trans woman who is inviting a bunch of other queer people to a space where we're going to be in close proximity. And I just safety is my biggest concern for me and for my guests. And also, like, my husband and I, we have very transparent conversations. He comes from a completely different background and world where, like, his friends are not queer. And so we don't know who they coming with, right? Mm-hmm. We can vouch for his friends, but we can't vouch for they plus one or their, you know, whatever, or who they decide they want to, because y'all know somebody always sneak a cousin in there or somebody just, you know, be nosy. And it's just like, in case you want to get belligerent and start calling people names that you shouldn't be calling, you up and out of here. I don't play those games. Like, I'm not doing it.
Yeah. It's worth the expense.
It is worth the expense. Yeah. Like, so there's definitely going to be security on deck to make sure that not only I'm safe, but to make sure that the queer and trans people that are coming to this wedding in this space are also safe. And I cannot deal. Like, when I tell you never again, never again, I would have to have Beyonce money so that I could hire somebody and I give them one page and they come back to me 6 months later with the stuff planned out. That's it.
And I still might change my mind. I might be like, you know, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'll pay for all that. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it.
It's your party.
Like, let's go to a beach. Let's have justice of the peace or whatever. But like maybe a little intimate ceremony. But like the whole thing. No.
Mm-mm. Look here. It's giving Kelly Rowland 27 people on the beach. Leave me alone.
Listen. That's it right there.
That part.
Oh.
All right. Before we shift to our backward opinions, when we record this, we are days away from Act Two, Cowboy Carter. I was like, Chris is not Beehive, but I know you and I are Beehive. So what are the things that you were hoping to gain from Cowboy Carter? What are the dreams that you have for this moment where we get to be our best cowboy queer selves?
Let me tell you something. I need a Selena sample because she's already hinted that she's like partnered with some legendary and iconic people. And I know that it's far-fetched, but if I know Beyonce, she has her finger on the pulse of people. And what I've noticed, if y'all haven't noticed, y'all know that country girl that went real viral, even though I follow her for the longest, Ten Rail, Miss Buckle Bunny. Mm-hmm. First of all, that song is old. Y'all are just catching on, but whatever. But she's been real quiet lately. Mm-hmm. And she hasn't been this quiet since the initial like buzz of Cowboy Carter, which, if I know Beyonce, she's pulled that girl to the side and been like, let me bless you and platform you right fast on this album. So I'm really hoping to see or hear her in a visual or a song. Really would love to see it. I need Bun B on there somewhere. I need like for the Houston culture. Like I need Slim Thug to make his re-entrance into Beyonce's music career. Because this is not a country album, it's a Beyonce album. And I feel that. I don't feel like we're gonna get, you know, Dolly Parton, you know, Jolene vibes.
Yeah. As much as she hopes that that's going to happen. And that little interview she did where she was like, yeah, Beyonce's totally going to cover that.
I think we're getting it. I think we might get like that. But I'm thinking like the overall sound of the, I think the sound of it is going to give country R&B trap Beyonce in the pasture manger of a barn. It's not giving country. And that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that we get an H-Town album out of Beyonce and not a country. Like, I'm hoping for more Chopped and Screwed. I'm hoping for, like, some of that stuff with a mixture of, like, that country aesthetic and, like, that country vibe in the back. Because to be perfectly honest, even as a Beehive member, I'm not really excited for Cowboy Carter. I'm excited for the looks because the looks have been looking, but I'm not necessarily sure I'm excited about the music. So I think that I'm getting excited about, like, the idea of the features and, like, how she's going to pull the culture currently into the album because she knows what we want to hear and what we want to see. And she's good for, you know, turning something over in the 11th hour because, baby, as quickly as she took Khalees off of that song, we don't know what she could do, you know? So I think that those are the things that I'm looking forward to. And my outfit to the concert, because I have some rhinestone chaps that are screaming for, you know, Miss Beyonce's presence to witness them. There will be rhinestone chaps and a rhinestone bra and a cowboy hat. And that is what will happen at the concert. That's all I'm wearing. So it needs to not be cold in there. I need a, you know, I need the body heat from the last concert to you know, do what it needs to do. But I think that overall, I'm excited that she was honest about the fact that her feelings was hurt. You know, like, not a lot of people can admit, and especially somebody on Beyonce's level, are willing to admit that, like, no, y'all saw it. I saw it. I was hurt. And I got in the studio. Like, she could have hopped on social media. She could have spent 2 months doing a press tour and we all would have watched and supported her. But instead she said, nah, I'm a come back and I'm going to fuck up their chart with the same person that they didn't want to fuck up there one night. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting to me to think about how if y'all would have just behaved, y'all might not even have this problem, but
you could have faked just been enjoying it or just, you know, I mean, we've all seen that CMA performance. Like, it was just stank faces. I was like, ugh. And it's such a good song and it was such a good performance. And I was just like, God, that's not even y'all's genre for real. But, no. You know, all right, y'all. Okay.
But, you know, said I'm going to hit them where it hurts. And it's on their charts and it's on their radio stations and it's in their pockets because
those pockets.
We all know. Beyonce, when she comes into our regular genre, all the rest of the artists got to put they instruments down for a year. So imagine all these banjo playing, y'all favorites, Carrie Underwood and all the rest of them, they finna be silent. Because who's gonna compete with Beyonce on the country charts? Nobody. So now, not only have y'all pissed her off enough to come and step into the space, but y'all finna have a year, maybe two, with no new music.
Like, when she's hurt, smiling so much from you saying all of that, because it's so true. And it just brings me joy to know that that's how much she's about to come and fuck them up, because she has planned for years on this.
Yeah.
She created this album before she created the Renaissance album. Yeah. What? Like, y'all are not ready. She and on an election year?
Right. Ooh.
Okay. This has been fine tuning. Look here, that album cover with that American flag, that was not just because she was representing the rodeo queen. Mm-hmm. That was, okay, y'all thought I was black on formation. Got you. Hold up. And I'm going to do it in the blondest wig that I have. Give me a minute. Like, give me a second.
The South will rise again in a very different way. That's what I took from it. I was like, I see y'all's think pieces, but if you ain't from the South, then black in the South. I was like, you kind of got it. But I'm like,
you got it.
Like, it's not. And it's our shit. It's our shit. I'm tired of people acting like this is our shit.
As Hope was saying earlier, you hop on Google and you'll learn something.
Listen.
It's right there. It's a free resource.
Yeah. So I like that. I didn't even think of it being like a Texas album, like the Selena thing. Oh my God, this could be some one of the ones. Like,
ooh. And Chris has now entered the chat. Thank you so much for that.
Listen,
so yes.
Listen. I was like,
you know, sometimes it takes a couple steps to get Chris as invested, but you know.
Yeah. I've been invested in this. You know, again, this last 10 years I'm not in the Hive, but like Beyonce is just like, come on. There's no one else. There's no one else doing it like her. It's not even close. So
no.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's go ahead to our bad queer opinions, because what type of bad queers will we be if we didn't have unpopular queer opinions? Hope, welcome to this section of the podcast. For this, please feel free to ask follow-up questions, to openly judge, to openly agree, disagree, whatever. It's, you know, it's a safe space until it's not. And that's what this section is. So here we are. My bad queer opinion is in preparation. This is in preparation because I have not seen this film that is coming out. But as we all know, Kristen Stewart is about to come out with a very like queer film. And a lot of it is rooted in sexual assault and harassment and a lot of issues that are going to be highlighted throughout the film. My bad queer opinion is that we need to just stop letting these white queer folks make these movies that are just rooted in trauma. I'm sick of it. I'm over it. We have so many more stories. So many more stories. I want the film where the straight guy has a lesbian as his best friend that they've never hooked up. They're fully platonic, and how she brings joy in his life just by being a great friend. Like, I want simple love stories. I want diversity. I am sick of seeing these white queers that go and put on clothes that they saw in like the late 80s and put on a mullet and have these really traumatic love stories that they have to put on film because they have the money to do it. I'm sick of this. Please stop attacking me through your strains. And I want something better for us.
It's a lot of stories to be told.
A lot.
Tell us the same type of stories.
I'm over it.
Agreed.
Agreed.
Tirelessly agrees with all of that. I'm over the idea. I think that Gabrielle Union said it a couple of years ago, where it's just like they pour the least into our projects because our projects make them the money to go and make these projects, which then get awards, right? Mm. And I think that it's also very interesting and very telling at the fact that studios will back these projects because they don't believe that queer people, whether no matter what race you are, they don't believe that we deserve to see happiness lived out on screen. And so even if the ending is like a small glimmer of hope, they don't mind us having to sit through 2 hours of pain and turmoil and color purpleism, you know, in order to get to that final moment at the dinner table where Steely finally stands up and says, bitch, not no more. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I'm really tired of seeing it. And I'm also, like you said, very tired of seeing it from a certain white class of people. And then also, like, to just not be obtuse and blind, the one time that we did see some semblance of that was Pose, and it was Ryan Murphy trying to, you know, basically essentially steal the story of Paris is Burning. Mm-hmm. And not having the courtesy to continue that story because you didn't have the range to continue that story after it ran out of footage from the movie. And I think that that's just very telling because then he tried to create that whole Generation X show, which lasted a season because nobody mm-hmm. watched it. Mm-hmm. But you use Pose's money to make that instead of continuing to make Pose, right? There was so much more lineage that they had to discover. And the fact that they were jumping years, you could have jumped into this year and like really gotten to the nitty gritty of like what's going on with the girls these days and created so much more jobs for trans people on that show for at least another 3 seasons.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that it was very telling to me, and it is very telling, like you said, that these white queer people come in and they want the trauma and they want the pain and they want the hurt, but they don't want anything else. And I'm tired of them like not only doing that, but then making money from it and nobody like being able to say anything because they have all the resources and we don't. So we kind of got to just be quiet and accept it. And I'm over that narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. It's a good one. It's a good one, Shayna.
Thank you.
Mine is in politics. My bad queer opinion is that politics and voting for marginalized people in America has always been about survival and probably will always be about survival. Like, we've always had to fight for it. We're still fighting to maintain the privilege and the power of voting. And though I want us to work towards a day where we don't have to play like the lesser evil game, like that's where we are. I've been voting since what, the first Obama administration.
I think we've been here since Obama.
Yeah. Like, and it's just like, I know it sucks to hear this lesser evil. There is white supremacy in both parties, absolutely, in different ways. However, we don't have the luxury yet of like not voting, or, you know what I mean? Or being okay with like, let's just see what happens, because there is a very clear plan by one party, the Republicans, the conservatives, to violently continue to strip the rights and lower the quality of life for not only marginalized people here in America, but globally. Like, it mm-hmm. has a global effect. Like, we saw 2016, like how that, you know, the indifference and the, you know, that fucked up things globally. And now being, I'll be 36 this year and having some time in, it's like, no, I've seen this thing happen. Like, it isn't, there's never going to be a politician that we love fully. There's never going to be the hero that comes through. It's just not, that's not where we are. But that doesn't mean we take elections off. That doesn't mean we don't hold people accountable. But voting is like, it's, you have to do it. It is about survival. And it is going to be about survival for us for a while. And that's just where we are. Republicans have a whole Project 2025 plan. They put their intentions out there. It is in black and white. You could go see it. They're saying the quiet parts out loud, 10 toes down on the world they want to create. And I still hear people acting like the parties are so similar. And I'm like, not really. Like, it's very clear. There's two very different intentions for how this, the, you know, their world that they see. So, like, I get the angst. I get the disappointment. But that's just where we are. That's what it is. Like, we have to vote. It is about survival. Is it Charles M. Blow has this video clip about voting defensively, where it's like, it's not about liking anybody. It's like, who's going to do the, you know, less harm to me. So that's where we are. And I don't, you know, again, it's like not the sexiest take, but it just, I don't know. It is what it is. That's where we are. So make sure y'all vote, please. Like, just, you know,
no, first things.
Whew.
I think that my unpopular but popular opinion is about in that same realm, which is like this new podcast uplifting by Black people that Candace Owens is getting.
Oh my God, every brand.
Everybody is trying, and my thing is, it's Black people.
Yeah.
And pop, like Joe Budden, really? And like, I'm just really... The idea that we are willing to overlook the egregious nature of some of the claims that this woman has made, the idea that she literally wore a White Lives Matter shirt, not an All Lives Matter shirt, but a White Lives Matter shirt in opposition, in the prime of the BLM movement. And nobody is asking her to hold herself accountable for those moments. Y'all are up here pussyfooting and kikiing and ha-ha with this woman as if we have not all been in agreement that she is completely and totally forever uninvited from the cookout until she really atones for her actions. And yeah. I don't throw away Black people, right? I'm just not going to throw her away. But if y'all are going to platform her, put her ass in the hot seat. And what's also very interesting to me is that y'all had more smoke for Omarosa, who was literally doing her job, than y'all have for this woman who made it her job to be an asshat and got picked up by networks because they saw that she could be a political pundit, not somebody who had gone through their entire life in politics and decided that that was what they truly believed. And whether, you know, you supported what Omarosa believed or not, that was something that she worked towards. Candace just found a lane and wrote it. Let's not mention the fact that she wanted to be very leftist at the beginning. She just was not making good points and got kicked because she couldn't pull some of the bullshit that she's pulling over the right-wing Republicans' eyes over here, because we wanted you to do your research. We wanted you to go back and get better at some of the things that you were saying. And she did not want to take the time to do that. And so she went over there and started to run amok, and y'all are not holding her accountable for these things. And I think that in similar ways, we are seeing this rebrand happen with so many other people who are leaving the right because they're recognizing for real, and finally seeing that motherfuckers is racist. And it doesn't matter how much you've kissed their ass or licked their boots over the years, they're going to continue to be racist. And the idea that nobody is talking about and violently laughing in her face about the fact that the same people that you have been bandstanding for and creating these narratives for are the same people that turned around and told you that your black ass does not make them feel safe in any profession, let alone flying a plane, and decided to fire you over some anti-Semitism comments that weren't necessarily even made. And now you looking like, huh, what? I can't believe the racism. Mm-hmm. Bitch, you've been spewing it yourself for the last 3 years. What do you mean you can't believe it? It's your own talking points coming back to bite you in the face with the white men who should have been saying them now the entire time. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait to see what your husband says after he realizes that this rebrand is the thing that's going to save you all's relationship and your house, because you are the breadwinner in that relationship. So now that you no longer has that Fox money and all of that stuff, I wonder what you're going to do. And the idea and the thought of Black news media welcoming her in on some, oh, she's still one of our sisters, without having her properly atone for it, is sickening to my stomach. And I say that it is my problematic quote because there are some Black people who very recently, one of my associates, I will say, who I had to block because they've been talking about how, oh, like all of a sudden, I think that she's been making sense. Where?
That's what I don't get.
Where?
And then when you see it, it's always anti-queer and trans stuff that she's saying, where they're like, wait a minute now, she has a point. And it's
she brings a lot of the people in. That's her,
or
that's
that phobic talk of Lizzo, all that. It's like, if she attacks Black women and women in general, and queer and trans people, they're like, oh, wait a minute.
Absolutely. She's making a point. Yeah. But like I tell people all the time, like I've always told people for years, if you want to get the leader of the KKK and the leader of the Black Panther movement and the leader of the Israelites together to agree on something, talk about queerness. Mm-hmm. And watch just how quickly they go from being the worst of enemies to the best of friends. Mm-hmm. And if that doesn't tell you that it's about hatred, if that doesn't tell y'all that it's about transmissia and homomissia, because y'all don't like phobia, right? Y'all don't like that word. God forbid somebody call you what you actually are. So I'm gonna narrow it down. It's not about the fear of us. It's about the unfounded disdain or hatred for missia. Look it up. Google is free. Mm-hmm. When you think about the idea that y'all come together on those topics and will literally put aside the fact that this person will hang you. If y'all weren't talking about queerness right now, you would be in a tree. Quite literally.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the part that you don't remember as y'all are helping them push their narrative on homo and transmissia because they have a louder voice as white people to do away with it and dismantle it in your eyes. But it's like the second that conversation is over, you do realize that they are still the snake in the grass that is trying to swallow you whole and has been measuring you up the entire time that they've been talking about the queers with you. Like, let's not forget, the snake is not laying in bed with you because it likes you, my love. The snake is laying in bed with you so that they can measure how much of you it can swallow. And as soon as it realizes that it can get your entire body in its mouth, you can rest assured you're going to wake up not able to breathe because you're going to be in its belly. And that's what they do to y'all every single time, and you allow it. And I think that that's the thing that folks have to understand is that for so long, Candace was allowing those people to lay next to her in bed and she finally got swallowed up and y'all are not making room for her to have to atone for the fact that she did fucked up things before we cut her out of the belly of the anaconda. I still got questions.
She doesn't even have anything that a value to us. You know what I mean? We've watched her for almost 10 years because I know it's around the time, I think it was Kanye that was the first person to platform her, which they are bosom buddies and twins and, you know, wore those White Lives Matter shirts together, smiling, showing teeth in those shirts and everything showing and doing teeth. All the stuff that they can, denying the George Floyd thing. They've done so much. It's like you could do a highlight reel. And some people, thank God for content creators, have started to put that up like, that Candace Owens, that's who y'all wanted. She's done nothing to atone for it. She hasn't said sorry. And when you hear her talk, because I was like, I heard like a snippet, all I could hear from the Breakfast Club. And I was like, she doesn't know anything. She doesn't even talk about anything that's like you said, Omarosa had a background in politics and everything. Wasn't Candace like a failed actress or something? Like she's not even like she's not that person, y'all. Like, y'all make her sound like she's so intelligent, and she's not. Like, that's not her. That's not her bag. This isn't her arena. She did this to make money. It is a grift, and y'all just letting her back in.
Like, I can't wait to see. Thing. I cannot wait to see some of her new speeches and things now that she doesn't have her writers from Fox.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Because y'all thought that she was eating, but those were the white girls who were saying the things that they couldn't say because it was overtly racist. So they were putting it in the mouth of the Black woman. So I want to see just how snippy and intelligent she sounds now that she no longer has access to those resources. And, you know, we'll see. We'll see what is given. But I told my publicist, I was like, I want audience with her. Because she's had space with a bunch of trans people, but she deliberately picks certain trans people that are not equipped and ready. Mm-hmm. And now I am ready more so than ever because I know you don't have your team, but I don't need one, my love. So any day that you're ready while you're on this campaign, let's have a sit down, Ms. Owens. And if she ever pops through DC and I have the opportunity, y'all might as well get the camera ready because I'm going to give y'all the clip that deserves to be had from this girl, and not just about the queer community, about Blackness in general. And that's my unpopular queer opinion.
Love it. Perfection. And when that happens, put me on that guest list. I will be there. Absolutely. Front row center. Okay.
Absolutely. Thank
you so much. I'm going to download the video. All that.
Like and subscribe. Friends.
Commenting to boost. Like, thank you. Finally, somebody. That. And she's picking strategically, like you said, the Joe Buttons, the Breakfast Clubs, the people who can't, they don't know shit about politics for real. She's not talking to anybody who could really push back on all of the outrageous shit that she said. She was on the Breakfast Club. They were like, finish the sentence. God is good. And she was like, amen. And I was like, get out of my face. Get out of my face. Get out of my face. She literally said, amen.
Somebody was in her ear like, I don't know. I don't know. Just bless him. Bless.
Dead ass.
Bless him.
I don't want to hear shit else. I don't want to hear shit else about Candace Owens and the Black
community. She did not say she cares. Amen.
She I'm said, crying. Amen. Finish the sentence. God is good.
All amen. The time.
Amen.
Oh my God.
Right. No, she said, so, amen. And then if they had repeated all the time, she would have been like,
what do you mean?
Praise the Lord?
So, no.
Praise him?
No.
What? That's what would have... I can't. Mm-mm. I'm not letting we're us not go on this. About her
we're
anymore.
Not doing
nope. We're wrapping up. Okay. We're wrapping this show
had
up. No.
Kamala done that? Oh, God. No. Oh, God. Oh, God. You
you're
know?
Not wrong.
But...
You're not wrong. But, you know. Candace.
Candace. Whew. Tell you what.
Oh. And on that note, we're going to go ahead and wrap up the show. You know, we would never leave you without giving shout outs to our faves. My shout out this week goes out to Queer Femme Parties. It's cultivating a community celebrating QT, BIPOC, pole and drag artists in the Bay Area. They have a mix of fundraisers, parties, brunch. Brunch, okay? Mm. Y'all know I love brunch. So, mm-hmm. and so much more. So you can follow and support them at Queer Femme, F-E-M, Parties on IG.
That sounds cool. My shout out is to Black House Radio, which is a YouTube series for Black DJs and Black sound, paying homage to the past, present, and future of house music. You can follow them on YouTube and on IG at Black House Radio.
My shout out is to the Black Trans Femme Collective, or BTFA. They are sponsoring and basically set up a space for Black queer and trans femme creators in New York right now, just to be able to go and create all of your wildest dreams and make them come true. You can find them at BTFA Collective on Instagram and YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, IG, all the places where they are. And if you're a Black trans artist and want to be added to their collective list, I would recommend that you reach out to them because there are plenty of resources and an entire studio for you to record and find your voice in.
Amazing. And for everyone else, where can they find and support you?
I am at Hope Giselle on every single platform except for TikTok. It's just Hope Giselle 1 or HopeGiselle.com. And you can feel free to support me in whichever ways make your heart sing. My podcast, Can We Talk, is coming back at the end of the spring. I don't want to say summer because it's just the end of the spring. I don't know what part of the summer, right? But Can We Talk is definitely coming back. So I would say catch up now. It's Can We Talk with Hope Giselle, wherever you listen to podcasts. And we will be back before the summer starts. So really excited.
So excited for that. Well, Hope, thank you so much for your time today. This was so fun. I feel like we didn't even get to everything that we wanted to get to because there's so much and you're just so multifaceted in all that you do and the things that you do and so talented in all of the things that you do. So thank you for your time with us here today.
Thank y'all for having me. It was a blast. I enjoy it.
Thanks so much. We got to have you back and put that in the air, but you know, got to have you back on. But thank you so much for taking the time. And we're so excited to speak with you. We told you in pre-production, we were like, you have been on our like wish list for guests that we wanted to have on. So glad that we could make this happen. And yeah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank y'all so much for having me.
All right. And for everybody else, thank you so much for tuning in. And we will see you next week.
Take care.
Shout out to Sienna Liggins for our Bad Queer soundtrack titled Me Again, and our sound engineer Cesar for making us sound like we know what we're doing. If you enjoyed the episode, please take the time to leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time. It's me again. Can we talk about things? I'm so sorry that I'm coming.